All right, guys, welcome back to the Shintaro Higashi Show with Peter Yu. Peter Yu's not here. Special guest, Austin Cook. Thank you.
No, thank you, sir. Right.
Austin is a high-level judo grappler from back in the day. We grappled right around the same time.
That's right.
Maybe I was kind of on the way out and you were kind of on the way in, but there's some overlay, and your Instagram is Bad Boy Medicine, right?
Yep.
And you have such a presence online now, so we just kind of have to have you.
No, it's because everyone's always asking me about Shintaro, so I'm glad we could make this happen.
Yeah, and you know what's cool about you? It's not just like, oh, I did judo, you know, seriously 10 years ago, and I'm just kind of doing that. You're innovating. You're doing no-gi stuff, and you have content that's relevant for today. Mm-hmm. You're always experimenting. So I kind of wanted to go into that and interview about that. But first, we have a couple of sponsors, Jason and Levon. You know it. Thank you very much. Judo TV, discount code Shintaro, Fuji Sports. Also, that's another one. And you, too, can sponsor us, too, through Patreon. So let's take it from the beginning. How was your grappling journey? Like, where did it start? You know, you have a unique story.
Yeah, So a bit unconventional. I started when I was 15. My parents enrolled me in judo.
15, that's late.
Yeah, a little bit late in the game. And so I think like a lot of us, I wanted to be obviously as good as I could, got addicted.
Yeah.
And then quickly sort of came to the realization that if I want to beat guys that are always going to be better than me, if I stay in the current system, in terms of training methodology and approach, I have to approach things a little bit different.
Yeah.
And so I kind of went about it trying to question every dogma that exists. So
I love it.
Yeah, just trying to troublemake, you know?
Yeah.
A little bit of the bad boy, you know?
Which is no, that's great. Because people usually say like, oh, osotogari, you have to point your toes and turn your point toes outward.
Yeah.
And it's like they focus so much on this foot shape. It's like, does it really matter?
Right, exactly.
So that's why it doesn't.
No, exactly.
You know, and that's the one thing that most guys will focus on. And I used to question that too. It's like, why does it matter?
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
And I think
one of the things. No one could
answer. What's that?
No one could answer.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I don't think there is grappling trends, they change throughout time. And people have always mostly been good at grappling. And things go back and forth and kind of, there's a cyclical nature. And so I don't think there is always a right answer, and I try to approach it where, well, if everybody thinks this is the right answer, how can I tweak things to make myself a little bit unorthodox, because it's a little bit of a cheat code, right? You don't have to be as good if you're unorthodox. Yeah. So try to exploit
that. And it means a lot coming from you, because you're a guy that started at 15 and won U.S. Nationals, won U.S. Open. You were on the U.S. National Team for judo, right? So you did this in a very short amount of time, but you must have played some sport leading up to that.
Yeah, so I did. I've always been active. My parents weren't huge fans of video games, so they would just send me off into the woods. I'm from North Carolina. So I was always like climbing trees, building forts, wrestling around with my friends, play a little bit of soccer. And so I think.
But no like high level, like, hey man, you're going to be a freaking gymnast or none of that. No organized sports, just like an active kid.
Right, exactly.
Were you just a freak of nature athlete?
That's the thing. I don't think so. I was never the strongest guy in the weight room, even lifting with my friends. I was never the quickest, but I've always been, I've always approached my learning a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And I think really when we're improving at grappling,
yeah.
it's not so different than learning anything. So if you can get good at learning, you can apply it to grappling. And that's exactly what I tried to do. But
yeah. All right, so you had the four-year thing. You went to high school and college, and then you were doing judo the whole time. Mm-hmm. And then what was your first real accolade in judo, where you like kind of broke through and you were like, oh, man, like I'm kind of in it? Was it at the junior national level or the senior level?
Yeah, so my first junior nationals when I was 15, I actually won it.
What? So you won 15-year-old division the first year you were doing judo?
Yeah.
That's kind of freaky. How is that possible?
I just
great, you gotta fact check that.
And then I moved to Colorado when I graduated high school, OTC.
You went to college there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where'd you go to school there?
UCCS, University of Colorado, Colorado Springs.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow.
And I took a year off after high school just to acclimate to the training there. And
wow, you really leaned in.
Oh yeah,
and at this point, because, you know, for those of you guys, this guy went to Stanford for medicine. So you're a freaking doctor by trade, right? And which we'll talk about that, you know, work-life balance, judo and grappling and career. But did you know you were going down that path already when you were in college?
Sort of. When I was in college, I was, so let me just, I guess, start after high school. After high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do. But I was a big fan of mixed martial arts, watched UFC all the time, power Parisian, watched them toss people.
Yeah.
And when I first went, I wanted to keep that open, which is one of the reasons I didn't start college right away.
Yeah.
But then I sort of did more research into the, you know, the effects that cumulatively being
punched in the head.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a little scary.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to do that. I ended up going to college. My parents are in science. I started to do that, and really,
what do?
They're just they run up. My dad runs a lab. My mom used to work in a lab, and now she teaches figure skating.
Oh wow, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so athletics run in your family. You have genetically good genes, so like for coordination, probably, right?
Maybe, yeah.
You know, and are you flexible?
No. I think my balance is pretty good.
Yeah.
I've always been an active, like I said, watch Dragon Ball Z,
and
pretend I was, you know, Goku, Vegeta, doing cartwheels, and I think that actually did have a pretty big effect on any sort of acrobatics that grappling consists of. But I started taking these science classes, and I liked the same thing that appeals to me with judo, which is problem solving.
Yeah.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah.
Started that, then went to medical school, which looking back, I have some regrets that I stopped too early.
Yeah.
Because I was consistently, in my mind at least, improving with nationals. I got fifth, then third, then second, then first, and that was my last one.
Do you remember we were on an international tournament
together? Yeah, Chile, right?
Was it Chile?
Santiago, maybe?
Is that when I had the concussion?
I think so.
Yeah, oh man, that was brutal. Let's not talk about that.
Don't remember that one.
Not a good result for me either. So
I remember meeting you. Actually, I feel like, did you go to Brazil?
No.
You never went to Brazil? So maybe it was Chile.
I think so.
So I was really on my way out. That was like, man, that was not a good tournament.
That was my last year as well, though.
Yeah, I remember because the first time I've had a conversation with you, I was actually very excited to meet you.
Oh.
Because you beat my buddy Dave at Nationals, and I watched that match because my buddy Dave was competing. And I think I won it the year you took second or third, or something like that, right? 2011-ish?
I remember you winning before me.
Yeah, and I'm friends with Ed Liddy, so I remember talking to your coach and be like, and then I was like, yo, who is this kid?
Nah.
He's like, oh, this kid's good. You know, he just came out of nowhere, right? So I remember knowing you, and then the first conversation was like, oh, you're going to keep doing this? You're going to try to make an Olympic team? You were like, nah, you know, I'm just doing this until I go to medical school. And I was like, this freaking guy. Trying to set up his life and not leave grappling. Like, I was like, this freaking guy, man.
Look, I had his claws in me. Got addicted, tried to kick the habit when I was in medical school. Couldn't do it, so now I'm back.
All right, so during medical school, right? Like, were you training at all, or did you take a hiatus, or?
So, I guess going back to the unorthodox nature of my training, a large part of it, actually, I can do with no partners. So when I stopped doing judo, I maybe went to one or two judo classes, but for 6.5 years, I didn't do any judo. So I wasn't on the mat at all, but I continued doing.
For 6 years?
Damn. Yeah, a long time.
Yeah.
But I continued doing this sort of, it's kind of hard to describe, but meditative shadow, uchikomi shadow movement throughout. And I had always felt pretty strongly that it was responsible for a lot of the success I had, but I didn't really know. It's hard to really say. So when my buddy, I kind of got back into BJJ a little bit serendipitously, got a text, my buddy Rodney, who I grew up with doing judo, he wrestled, became very good, 16-1 state champ, and then he went to NC State.
Nice.
Got before that, sixth at Fargo. Got
results.
Yeah. Then I got second D2 national. So obviously I was talking a little trash to him throughout that time. Like, I could still toss you. Blah blah blah. Hiding in California.
Yeah.
Right, when he was in North Carolina, we were eventually in the same place, and he finally had to face the music and go grapple him. And so that was my first entry into BJJ.
Wow.
And fell in love again.
Yeah, and then were you like, so during those 6 years off, you were studying to be a doctor, were you like, oh man, I miss training or I miss judo? Were you thinking that?
Absolutely. And I hoped that with the time away from the mat, it would get easier, but
yeah.
it didn't. I was just in the OR or behind the computer,
yeah,
imagining scenarios where, okay, what if,
yeah,
what if this guy gripped me this way, or even no-gi, yeah, watching.
Doctor, I'm bleeding. It's like, oh, hold on 1 second. I gotta fucking figure out this
time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Stand like this for a second.
Yeah.
Especially with those lapels always tempting me, oh, with the white coats.
Yeah, yeah, grab this guy. Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah, because you took a complete hiatus. I remember that when you left in like 2015 when you started medical school. That was around Chile time, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we were there. And then I didn't see you for years. And then all of a sudden you pop up on my Instagram feed launching this guy with no-gi judo. I'm like, what? I didn't even know this guy did jits. I assumed you were doing jiu-jitsu the whole time, but you weren't.
Oh, when I started back?
When your Instagram started popping off.
Oh, yeah. So that was actually, I started that. And I've been doing jiu-jitsu 2.5 years, so not that long.
Yeah.
But got back. I can tell you the story sort of about my, I guess, re-entry to grappling, if you
yeah.
want.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So again, going back, texting my buddy, talking trash, end up showing up at this no-gi jiu-jitsu practice. So yeah. Walked in, hadn't been on the mat for a long time.
Open mat?
Open mat, yeah.
Yeah.
Immediately, sort of, you forget of all these little stimuli that grappling exposes you to. The smell of the mats, even.
Yeah.
Hearing people tease each other, you know, the timers. Immediately, I started coming back.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was, but I felt confident.
Yeah.
Going against a no-gi, that was a mistake. Got immediately high seed, immediately misdirection single, ducked. But it started to feel more familiar.
Yeah.
And then I went home and my pride was a little hurt.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, Rodney, he really got one over on me. I was telling my wife about it, complaining. Like, hi, you know, I could have, blah, blah, blah. But then I forget exactly what she said, but I started to get self-conscious. Like, oh, Sarah has never seen me grapple.
Yeah.
What if she doesn't think I'm, you know, some classic insecurity of the
But
so then I texted this guy, Rodney,
and
I said, I could beat you in a gi wrestling rule set, even if you could do leg grabs.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
You were talking shit, huh?
I just doubled down. So, and to make matters worse, I invited my wife, Sarah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
man, so, that's bold.
I know. Which, going back, well, man, I don't know if I invited that.
Yeah.
So we had a whole mock match, which I can, if there's an interest, I can post.
Yeah, but, post it. Yeah, fun.
So
yeah.
Walked in, had the lights
dim,
tournament lights, referee.
Just you and this kid?
It was a whole gym, so maybe there, I don't know, 30 people watching or so.
Wow.
And it was my
just
second time back.
Just for that?
Yeah, well, it was we sort of monopolized the practice, I guess. Shout out to my coach, Brandon, who's so understanding with that
Brandon
stuff.
Brandon who?
Brandon Brown.
Okay.
Yeah, he's my jiu-jitsu coach. Him and Roderick Hansen.
Cool.
But, walked in at Hajime, off the whistle equivalent double leg, gets in, and I remember thinking, oh my God, this guy, he's so fast and so strong, bellied out. And was sitting there in Seiza. I looked at Sarah, and she was looking back at me.
Yeah.
I thought this guy was
a national champ. What is going on here? This guy sucks.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I was worried about.
Yeah.
And then I felt this sort of feeling I hadn't in a long time. And, you know, life gets more complicated as you get older, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And I didn't have this thing, grappling, that had anchored me. And I looked at her and I kind of felt that familiar spark that I love.
Yeah.
And I didn't want it to go away. And it sort of set this process alight.
Yeah.
And so I got up just feeling that old pride.
Yeah.
Erase the fatigue.
Mm.
Just killer instinct. And I started to find my rhythm, gripping.
Yeah.
Killing power hands. Faking, and eventually he started to bite on the fix, and I could feel it. I could feel the rhythm coming back, like a familiar song or something.
Setting up.
Uh-huh. Not being afraid of the underhooks.
Yeah.
But waiting for him to dig. I found the kataguruma. Didn't score.
Yeah.
almost got a Senkaku, didn't quite get enough to pin. It goes into golden score.
Yeah.
And didn't realize how tired I was, but I was, and we both were. But then one of my favorite throws, Morote Sayanagi, and I almost felt like a whisper of like, oh, there's something familiar there. There's that pocket, you know what I mean? Mm. And then fake. Yeah. Eventually I found it, drove, scored, so I won. And in golden score, huge relief, immediately realized how tired I was. We went outside. He had already thrown up, and I was about to throw up, vomit outside, gross, but that's grappling.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Love it. And then, so then you're like, all right, I got to keep doing this again.
Exactly.
And then, so, but you have a weird training schedule where you're not in the dojo every day or even three times a week doing regular gem pop classes.
Right.
Right? And this is going to be semi-controversial. You only go to open mats.
I've never been to a jiu-jitsu class. I only do open mats. I probably practice... One practice meaning go and engage in live rolling maybe once every few weeks. So I do, it's a very small percentage of my training. And my rationale is sort of, I guess there's sort of, I kind of view grappling as there's two, in all sports really, there's two different elements. There's the physical side, right? Yeah. So strength, speed, and then there's the mental or like intellectual side. Yeah. And different sports consist of these things in different ratio. So sprinting, right? I'm never going to beat Usain Bolt in a sprint. No. It doesn't matter how good my technique is, but then there are certain, I don't know, sport, we can say chess, where it's maybe 0.1% physical. So that, jiu-jitsu and judo, I it feels to me that maybe 80-20, something like that, maybe wrestling, judo, and jiu-jitsu sort of being the most kind of complicated just because there's so many things you can do. Mm. And so I think the training should reflect that, where 80% of it should be mental.
But you've done all this training before.
Yes.
So a lot of the stuff is already ingrained in your
abilities. Exactly. You know? Exactly.
I'm not trying to say like, oh, guys, just go, you know, once a month to open mat, you're going to get better. We're not saying that, right? We're not saying that. I'm definitely not advocating for that. But that's a very unique thing. So what do you do? So whenever you go, let's just say you go once a month open mat.
Yeah. Like,
man, these guys must hate you.
No, I've ran into issues in the past.
Hey, I'm here for the free class. Mind if I set up my camera and beat you guys? Like, put it on Instagram? Like,
that's one of the reasons. And that's why I liked the OTC so much, is because it was very unstructured.
Yeah.
So, Ed, it was sort of just live rolling, right? And so the responsibility to learn is you don't really get better unless you're taking that initiative. And then when starting jiu-jitsu, it felt very similar to that, where there was a coach who was there to provide the learning if you go and approach them. But I don't know, if we're all probably bad sometimes with the, I don't like being told what to do, and probably a lot of us like that.
Yeah, yeah, I get that.
I like approaching it.
Yeah. I like approaching. That's why I'm unemployable most days.
Same. But, so, he is, but the club is very accommodating for that, but it is counter culture in some ways.
For sure.
I've definitely seen other gyms where, you know, there's, this is what we're doing now, don't, and I don't think they would be cool with what I do, so I'm lucky to be there.
Yeah, definitely. So what does your training look like between, like, all right, so you go once a month open mat, like, what are you doing for the whole month?
So every day since I was a teenager, I've been doing this sort of routine where I call it my mind dojo. This is going to sound a little weird.
We've got to film this, by the way.
We're going to cut it in. Yeah. It's a mind dojo.
Yeah, so building this mind dojo. So what does that mean?
We'll put like a gong, you know?
Get some incense.
Yeah.
So it, again, going back to the mental side of it, I want to be able to practice without going to practice, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And... Mm. Which is hard to do but theoretically you could get into a zone where what you're visualizing accurately meets what it feels like in reality, but it takes a long time to build that. So certain positions I'm very familiar with, that sort of body lock, chest, so there what I think it feels like is pretty accurate. Others, especially in jiu-jitsu, you know, leg entanglement stuff, I'm not quite there yet, but I've worked hard to sort of build this mind dojo since I was a teenager, and I feel like I can practice whenever I want, closing my eyes, thinking about it, practicing the movement, twitching,
yeah,
without exposing myself to injury or fatigue or burnout, yeah, quite as much.
Yeah. And you know, it so sounds nuts, that. But it makes sense, right? Because people play blindfold chess all the time and then work out moves in their heads and then look at different lines and openings and stuff like that. So, I mean,
think about
the mental side of it, yes.
And,
you know?
And I approach this way. So, I mean, learning science and medicine, if you don't necessarily need a deck of flashcards in front of you if you're going through the day rehearsing that on your own, right? So
yeah,
you can learn many things like that. Mm. Practicing a speech, practicing
music.
Music, yeah, exactly.
You play an instrument?
No, I don't.
You'd probably crush it.
No, I wish.
1 year of practice at Carnegie Hall.
That's right, yeah. Can you imagine? That's your next YouTube child right there.
I don't know. But that is like pretty, I guess, conflicts with a lot of the training methodologies. And so I think that there should be more of that. And I don't want to advocate for this is what you should do, yeah, but I think there should be a lot more of it.
I think there's definitely a place for it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the people who show up to practice, do training, leave and forget about it and go back to their lives and it's completely compartmentalized, I think those guys come into training, have the same practices over and over, and they never really grow.
Yeah.
And so I always say at the end of the class, right? Like, all right, go home, think about this for 10 minutes, and then go over it and visualize it. And one of my advice for a lot of guys, like, visualize it from a first-person standpoint and a third-person standpoint. So do you, when you're visualizing, you're, like, watching Greg's face and then shoving his head down and then front headlock? Or, like, is it one of those things where you're watching yourself do the move on Greg?
Mm-mm. It's, I wouldn't even say it's watching. It's imagining feeling. It's imagining the little twitches that you feel with our... if our hands are antennas, what does it feel like when Shintaro is going to fake? And then imagining that, okay, that doesn't quite feel like I thought it would. Go back, make it more accurate, practice, go back. Maybe I'm 30% of the way there and go back and forth, back and forth.
That's not even visualization. You're almost living it.
Yeah. Imagining feelings. But I mean, we know what it feels like to, I don't know, have our phone vibrate or have someone shove us, right? And so we can do it.
Dude, I have phantom phone going off in my pocket syndrome all the time. I'm like, yo, my phone ringing? It's like, oh, it's not even in my pocket. So I guess it's like visualization meets kinesiology. It's like kinesiolation or something.
Right, it's like imagining sort of the proprioception. I think it's super underutilized and...
Yeah.
And the more sort of intellectual of the sport... So with BJJ, for example, the more utility that there is for this sort of training approach, and if you can never really leave practice, go home on the drive home, fortify what it feels like. It felt like this.
Yeah.
Then you imagine it. You have questions like, what if I could do this in this situation? What would that feel like? Go back and forth, and it takes a long time, but eventually you can develop it.
So where do you go in your house to do this?
Usually outside of my backyard looking like a weirdo.
You're mumbling to yourself, your wife walks in, you're like...
She's like, yeah. And
you're like, what are you doing?
And I also try to implement these movements in my everyday life, so...
Oh, that's cool.
When I'm walking down the hall, for example, I try to, if I'm going this way, I try to walk, fake one way, go the other way. And I've been doing this since I was a kid, yeah. All right. Having light switches, yeah. I learned this from my friend Alex.
Don't think this the wrong way. Are you autistic?
What's that?
Are you autistic?
Maybe undiagnosed.
Maybe there's a little bit of tism in there. I don't know, man. But it's cool tism.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm gonna make it cool.
No, but it's like some people have that kind of a special mind where it's like, you know what I mean?
I don't know.
Rain Man.
I think I can get obsessive about that stuff, and it helps with certain sports.
I mean, I get it, right? Because I'll be sitting in school thinking about judo, and then, like, everyone's quiet, and I'm like, go like this,
exactly.
And people are like, what the fuck, you know?
Exactly.
And it's like, I was just thinking about...
So imagine if you had forced yourself to do that even more than you would. I mean, how could you make the argument that you wouldn't be better?
Dude, I'm too scared. I already, like, mumble stuff to myself all the time. Like, I'm going to be, like, the craziest old guy, like, mumbling and twitching on the train.
Yeah, you just got to accept you're going to look weird.
Yeah.
But all sorts of things, and walking through life thinking, how can I incorporate something? So I stole this from my buddy Alex to work on his hip flexibility and hip strength. He just turns off lights with his feet. Which it sounds so simple and weird, but this same motion, it feels exactly like a front uchimata, and it works on the hip flexibility just a little bit.
Yeah, whenever I get on an escalator, I'll stretch my calves.
Yeah, exactly. You're already sort of doing it.
Always. 100,000%. You ever do that?
No.
And I love that you're... So you're already looking weird. That's...
I mean, you see guys that like waiting for the subway sometimes, like doing this, like judo guys.
Exactly,
like,
exactly.
You know, and then when you're in Japan, you see that, and you're like, and the guy's jacking his kai fighter, you're like, oh, that's 100%
a
judo.
1,000%. And I think a lot of us that have had success with it probably intuitively and naturally do a lot of that stuff, but I've really tried to lean into that, knowing that other people don't do it as much, to try to be unorthodox and to try to approach and view things through a different lens. But I mean, I love how that you're even open to considering this stuff, because it is pretty counter.
I mean, but look at boxing. You go to the gym, weightlifting gym, guys who don't even box are like, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
And you see golfers, right, waiting for the train, freaking doing their stupid swing.
Yeah.
You know, you ever play golf?
Mm-mm.
Such a dumb sport.
I love it.
That's why I said it.
No, what you were saying too, like when I'm at the driving range, like just picking the ball out with the club.
Exactly.
You know, moving it around, putting it in spot, like just those little muscle.
You've heard the, I mean, I'm sure you've heard people compare judo to dancing, right? You can dance by yourself, and it's all just movement. And I think techniques are not created equal. Certain techniques are more movement, but that's why I like foot sweep so much, because I can work on them by myself and I can work on the timing. But a double leg, I don't know. I'm not as good at that stuff, but it feels a little bit more physical. So I try to select techniques that this training methodology will accommodate. And so it ends up being a lot of movement based and imagining flick here, twitch here. And so I'm always just doing that. When I'm walking around, I'm like playing with my dog, and I'm going this way. It's easier than you'd think.
That's really interesting, man. Like, all right, so let's just give examples for maybe some of the viewers who are like, oh, this could be something that, you know, keeps me engaged. And, you know, people get injured, right? And they leave and they never come back.
Yeah, exactly.
But these are the things that keep you mentally engaged, that keep you in the sport.
Yeah, you're right. I think
because it makes you feel like you're improving. You know, the worst is like, oh, my elbow hurts. I can't train. Everyone's getting better. I'm going to go back in 3 weeks and everyone's beat me.
Or how many people could have done it and had some debilitating injury? And it's just a game of probability, right? And And also, I think doing this works on the sort of mechanics that would reduce the likelihood of an injury if you're constantly just ready to go like that, and then check yourself, imagine what it feels like. Then,
interesting. I mean, we all do this to some certain extent.
No,
right?
That's the thing. I think we all do this, but if you, I just try to lean into it more.
Yeah.
And I do think it works. And to be honest, I wasn't sure when I was away for so long.
Yeah.
But the guy that in our match, I mean, he actually got fifth at nationals in judo that year. I felt like in some ways, this guy Rodney Shepherd is his name.
Me too. I don't know.
So
I mean, you spoke of him, but I didn't know he was fifth at judo.
Yeah, I got seventh at U.S. Open. He's good, and weirdly certain. I think aspects of my game.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't do it for 6.5 years, I was better. And it was almost stressful for me, because I felt like, okay, I do have this, I guess, lens to view grappling that's different and that has been validated. And that's why I competed actually in that Sambo tournament on Instagram. And I did a judo tournament to ensure that.
Yeah, you just competed in something and you were blasting guys.
Huh.
What was that? What tournament was that?
It's of the Virginia Open.
You won it?
Yeah. I did a 73.
Something to this mind.
I did a 73 and 81, but I needed that, and I feel like both of us have an extra responsibility that we're not putting out things that are bullshit, right? We have to, and that is a litmus test for me. Where if there is something here, then I need to battle test it.
I think a lot of people already kind of do it, but you, like you said, you lean into it more.
Exactly.
So if someone's listening to this right now, right? They're like, oh shit, I usually go train 3 times a week, but I could only make it twice a week because X, Y, and Z. I really want to get good at Daiashi. Like, what would you prescribe to them using your methodology to get ahead a little bit?
So,
shortcut. Not in a bad way. People say shortcut's a bad thing. You know, shortcut, like, taking a shortcut through the highway instead of the local, that's dangerous. But, like, a real shortcut where it's, like, it's equally safe, but could get you there faster.
I think certain people are in better positions to do this than others because, like you said, we both have done judo for a long time. So, intuitively, our instincts are often correct, right? With this stuff, if you've never done it, the
sort of point.
You need a coach because you're not going to have those right instincts. But we've been doing this a long time. I've been obsessing over it a long time. And so our hypotheses tend to be correct, right? Mm. And so I think to answer your question with the foot sweeps, I don't think about it as seeing where they are. I think about it as, what does this feel like? And it's a hard thing to describe, but if you consciously sort of put yourself in that state, it starts to become easier and easier to visualize.
Yeah.
And then you can test it when you go back with, does this feel like I think it feels? And so with the foot sweeps, it's nice because it's so much tempo and so much being in a position and getting yourself there. And often, for me, foot sweeps feel like that's 80% of it. It's just getting myself, having a fake that looks realistic and looking at myself in the mirror, you know, flexing while I'm doing this. But like, seeing if I can, what does that look like? Yeah. And would I bite to that fake? And then thinking of it from the uke perspective, how would I react to that sort of fake? And then going back, well, if I would react to that fake in this way, chances are a lot of people are going to react to that.
So would you feel like the person shifting his weight away, and maybe not actually visually seeing them shift their weight from the front leg to the back leg, therefore it's unweighted and attacking, but do you just feel the person pulling away and then feeling, like, trying to imagine what it would feel like to connect my feet?
I try to imagine if I were getting faked or somebody were setting up a sweep, where would I not want a frozen puddle to be? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we've probably all done that. We're almost slipped when we're walking somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And that, to me, that's what a foot sweep feels like.
Yeah.
Not that we ever get foot sweeped, obviously. But
never.
But
got foot sweeped in Chile when I got the concussion.
If I just barely was able to keep my balance, then, well, where would I least want a frozen puddle to be? That's how I think about dashing. Or the coach you snap down that I kind of stumbled upon. It feels to me that if I was running and my foot got snagged on a root and I fell on my stomach, where would I not want this root to be if I'm running? And then I try to make my foot that root. I know it sounds pretty weird. Yeah, but
it definitely sounds weird. And I got to tell you, you sound like a crazy person.
Yeah, great.
But you have the grappling background to kind of make it okay. You know what I mean? And it's eclectic, it's different, and I feel like a lot of people can implement this, and it's not something that you should totally just be like, oh, this guy's nuts. But like, I think it can be a big portion of it. We do a lot of it already.
Yeah.
You know?
We all do it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the answer is not doing practice. I think I was able to improve quickly in judo because I did both.
Do you want to do more practices?
Sometimes.
Yeah. So what is preventing you from going in and doing just the regular? So is there a judo gym area?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There is. And they know you, obviously.
Yeah. You know, it's...
How close is it to your house?
About half an hour. Not far.
Okay, so you could go twice a week.
Yeah.
And when you go, is it a party? They're like, oh, Austin?
I work there during the day. I edit my videos there, so I'm there all the time anyways.
And you don't train?
I do train sometimes.
Jesus.
Well, it's also a game of probability. And when I tore my ACL,
oh, here we go.
I realized that, well,
dude, everybody who does judo at a high level, like, tore their ACL.
That's the thing, Shintar. You nailed it.
Yeah.
So how do you prevent that? You can implement these.
Don't take risks.
These methodologies, right? It's especially as we get older. The more you do Randori, the more likely you
are. Was it Tanya Toshi?
It was actually Seiji Hashimoto, who has awesome technique.
Really?
Joseph. It was my fault. I was actually, again, talking trash.
Kenny Hashimoto's brother?
Yeah. I was talking trash to him.
Are they a brother of three or two?
Two.
Joseph was a...
Seiji is Joseph.
Oh, yeah. Okay, he's a younger brother. Kenny also has unbelievable judo, dude. Kenny's, I wonder what he's doing.
Kenny's amazing. He's,
he hurt his neck, remember, back in the day?
Mm-hmm. But man, Sumigaishi from, I think, some Germany, Austria, something like that. Yeah. Someone sumied him onto his neck.
Yeah.
But with Seiji, I was, again, always getting
training
myself in situation. Training.
Yeah.
I was talking trash. We're playing that warm-up game, the basketball game. And then...
What's that?
So...
Piggy?
Yeah, it's Piggy. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Piggy, so...
The U.S. team would play Piggy at these... So they were like, all right, guys, we're at this tournament. We're going to warm up and we're going to do practice, you know, 3 days before the competition. Nobody get injured.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's start off with a warm-up game. And it's essentially like you take the ball and you pass it and run with it. You can run without the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Pass it and you try to put it into the other person's, like you put a gi on the floor and you try to hit the gi with it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah, exactly.
And people always get hurt doing that.
Yeah, and there's always rough
passing
that escalates. Well, it was a product of that. I felt Seiji had been a little too rough with me, and so I said, next time I just tackled him and made some comment, like, I've never wrestled, and you're supposed to wrestle D1, and how could I? And then he talked shit back, and then we were getting really rough with each other.
Was it fun, or was it like a little bit like...
It was getting a little like serious, but I went in for Ochi, and then he tried to sweep, but my foot planted like that.
But this
was
not
his fault. It was my fault.
You guys were playing Piggy?
It was Rendori after Piggy. We're both still mad.
Jesus, dude.
Which is often how it happens, right? Yeah. You're roughhousing or...
Travis never played Piggy. You know this?
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know. There was a time where he didn't. When he would be cutting weight and stuff. And we're like, let's play. And he'd just be like cutting weight on the side. And yeah. I think I've seen him play before. But there was a time period. He's like, I'm not playing that shit. I'm not getting injured for no dumb reason.
Speaking of... Travis, I was watching you guys' match the other day because,
yeah.
I mean, this is actually another reason I don't do more gi stuff is because you already do it so well that I don't really feel like I can give much to that as I can with the no-gi judo. But anyways, I was watching...
It definitely is a niche, no-gi judo.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's a little bit unexplored territory for the weirdos. My own sort of opinion on this, but I wanted to ask you, what throws do you think are most prevalent in judo that you should abandon completely, and in BJJ it's just not worth it.
Abandon completely? I mean,
or disproportionately abandon compared to judo.
Gi jujitsu or no gi jujitsu?
Let's start with gi.
Gi jujitsu. You know, like just like a harai goshi is tough to do. You know, collar and sleeve when the hips are down. And you know, when someone could just at any given moment, like you're setting it up, he could just sit down to the ground. You're doing all that for nothing, really. You know, so it kind of takes away the... Right? If you put two boxers and, you know, people are like, oh, you know, you should, right, or whatever it is, but, like, if you're boxing, if you don't want to box and you start running the other way, there's no boxing.
Mm-hmm.
The rules have to force these two people to engage in order for something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, when the rule set says, if you don't want to get taken down, you can just drop to the floor, it cuts away a lot of it. And the same thing with judo... Spider guard, lasso guard, all these complicated guards. Right. If you go down and if you get four stalemate for 5 seconds, it just stands you right back up. It's not worth learning, man.
So,
if you're competing,
Koshiguruma, because that was one of my answers. Koshiguruma, yeah. I think the head and arm throws, it doesn't feel worth it. Because even if you score Ippon or whatever, you're on the ground and they have an underhook. That's not, I'd rather be.
Yeah.
Anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, there's like ways to like turn into it and then go Ushirokesu Katame and transition, but yeah, definitely you're right about that. You know, they could scramble out of it. So, Koshiguruma, definitely. Even Osoto, you could stick out the leg and the guy could just grab a single.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Unless you really know it.
Yeah.
And learning how to not let a guy just reach out and grab a single off your Osoto, that's a skill in itself.
Uh-huh. Oh, right? and something that we had to develop when there were leg grabs, right?
Yes.
So we have an advantage.
Yeah, it's a lost art now.
Exactly.
We're starting judo now, you're 14, 15.
For us.
Yeah, definitely. We should put it out there just in case IGF decides to bring it back.
Right.
Or, you know, they have a new division in the Olympics or the freestyle judo, which is like a real thing now that they're trying to do in the United States. Like, if it takes off and it becomes a real thing, probably won't, you know, but like.
Yeah. What about Ippon Senagi?
I mean, Ippon Senagi is effective in all martial arts, and if you're good at it, like even you see it in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You know, quarter turn drop, full turn drop.
Right, the quarter turn, yeah.
You know, and drop Senagi is a good one, and you know, people will argue like, oh, it's not viable for the street, but it's like, what are we, that's a different argument.
Right. You yeah. know what I mean? You're right.
And then if you miss, you really give up your back. But if you could time it right, if you know it, but the time it takes to get good at it takes a long time.
Right.
But the quarter turn you could spam without giving up your back.
Yeah.
So that's might be worth learning first. And yeah. if you could do the quarter turn safely, repeat it, spam it, not give up a back, then maybe you could turn a little bit more into it. That's something might be worth doing also. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But foot sweeps?
Foot sweeps? Oh, I mean, yeah. It's. Yeah. I think it's hard to make the argument that in most forms of grappling, yeah. and yeah, wrestling maybe people are more proficient at leg grabs, but yeah. it's inherently such a low risk.
Yeah.
And importantly, energy inexpensive yeah. technique takes no energy.
No.
And I think something that's overlooked is you can wear on somebody's focus yeah. and concentration by doing yeah. something that you can ingrain in yourself that's instinctual yeah. by doing this sort of movement training.
Yeah.
But now they're not used to that, right?
Yeah.
And so they have to consciously devote a portion of their attention toward your feet, which means away from your hands, right?
Yeah.
So that sets up the gripping. So now if you can become proficient with foot sweeps and grip fighting,
yeah.
it's a large area that they have to devote their attention to,
yeah.
and that takes concentration and effort and energy.
Yeah.
And it's also your hands and your feet are the two parts of your body that are A, farthest like away from each other, and that you can move the fastest.
Yeah.
So it's think about if you know a punch is coming from here.
Yeah.
That's a lot easier to contemplate than now. What if I'm gonna kick you now? I'm gonna
shoot
a hook. I don't really know anything about striking, but
yeah, you did not look like you.
Yeah.
yeah.
I'm
not making fun of you.
No, no, no. But it's
yeah.
So I try to again like with my training ingrain these into my everyday.
Yeah.
So I don't have to think about them, but they have to think about them. And now I'm wearing on them. They're worrying about my hands. They're worrying about my feet. They're worrying about my face, but I'm not even thinking. I'm just on autopilot.
Yeah.
And
it's so unorthodox, even when you do, because like a normal wrestler would be thinking about like grappling, like they're throwing underhooks in there and then they're pulling them in and then right chest to chest. But the way you're moving, it's a little bit more, right?
This thing stopped recording.
Oh, okay.
All right, where can these guys find you?
Bad Boy Medicine on Instagram. That's
Bad Boy Medicine. You're doing a lot of no-gi stuff, right?
Yeah, pretty much only no-gi. And again, that's where I feel like I can contribute.
But you never had a coach to teach you no-gi judo.
No.
It's a product of your own mind and your own mind dojo.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'll tell you. Right now, I want to put Reagan in a rash guard and you're just going to be ragdolling like 40 minutes straight. So get ready, Reagan.
Sure.
All right, thanks, man. Great episode. Thank you. And then
thanks,
we're going to make some more. We're going to film now, so...